From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwestern Bureau. Thank you very much for joining us this week. Our conversation starts today with a look at broadband internet access in our rural parts of our listening area, not only Southwestern Wisconsin, but throughout the state as well. It's been made all the more apparent how important broadband internet access is during the times of COVID-19 with people working and going to school from home. Joining us to talk about that issue is Dale Knapp. He's the Director of Research and Analytics with the Wisconsin Counties Association. Dale, welcome to the show today.
Glad to be here, Ezra.
I'm very glad to have you. You've been part of a report that's been out several months now, working with the group Forward Analytics. You've released a report called Broadband in Rural Wisconsin, Identifying Gaps, Highlighting Successes. So as we begin the conversation about broadband, we all kind of have a sort of colloquial idea of what it is, but what is broadband? What specifically are we talking about when we talk about broadband internet access?
When the general public talks about broadband, essentially they're thinking about high-speed internet access, so access, typically over fiber cable lines, et cetera. The FTC defines it a little different. It is that same definition, but there, when they refer to broadband, they're referring now to upload speeds of at least 25 megabytes per second. So people that have 10 megabytes per second, I would still consider them to have broadband in the traditional sense. I guess in FTC language, it just wouldn't be adequate for today's purposes, really.
When you're talking about the federal organization, I might be mishearing you. Are you talking about the Federal Communications Commission?
I'm sorry, Federal Communications Trade Commission. Yes, yes.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
So FCC, okay.
Yes.
So yeah. I know it seems apparent, having been through COVID-19, having been through people working from home, going to school from home, but, you know, just to set the stage, why does broadband internet access matter so much?
It matters because, you know, the internet is now where we get so much of our information. It matters really for business. And we've been hearing this, for 15, 20 years, especially when you go north, businesses not having, good broadband access really struggle because so much of business now gets conducted online. Schooling is being done online. Telemedicine has been around for a while, but not really utilized, but now is in the time of COVID is being used more and more. So more and more of what happens in our lives is related, has to do with the internet and broadband and being able to access information from the internet. So you look at 20 years ago, we had cable TV. Now we have more and more streaming services online in terms of your home entertainment. So, it's become, I think now of internet access, the broadband infrastructure, really as kind of the interstate highway system of the 1950s, that it's a backbone that we need to make sure everybody has access to.
Another comparison I've heard through the years is with the sort of electrical system. I mean, we would never question nowadays the idea that it's absolutely imperative that a habitable human home would have electricity running to it and of some kind, whether it's, these newer solar power things that are coming up, but mostly connected to the grid, so to speak. But back in the day when they were first rolling this out, it wasn't available to everybody. Is broadband kind of like the modern version of that?
I think broadband has become that, everything is going digital, and some of us are going down kicking and screaming, not wanting it to go there. But we're headed that direction. I mean, your banking, everything has gone that way, or is fastly approaching going that way. So, everything has become digitized. The internet, that's a good example, is the, the electricity, going back to the 20s and 30s when everything got, we decided to, put in the electric grid throughout the nation. It is that.
What makes it more difficult to achieve complete broadband access in rural areas in particular?
Well, one of the there's a couple of challenges. One of the challenges can be terrain. So depending on the terrain in some of the rural areas, it can be very costly to lay the cable for broadband. And that's where we'll probably get to. There's some other technologies that can be used. But the other challenge is sparsity of population. So, if we're laying broadband cable that's costing $60,000 to $100,000 a mile, and that's only going to one or two households, it's not economical for the cable companies to lay that cable. So that's really where we are now in terms of the places that generally are without adequate broadband are the most sparsely populated generally, and it's just not economical. And that's where I think we're, this has always been a private venture. And I think we are now at the point where because of those kinds of economies, it has to become a public-private partnership to get, the rest of rural Wisconsin and the rural United States get access for those populations.
Dale Knapp is our guest today. He's the Director of Research and Analytics for the Wisconsin Counties Association. Dale, you mentioned before the difference between, you talked about the 25 megabits per second being officially the FCC's definition of broadband internet access. You talked about many people meeting the threshold of 10 megabits per second and how that is pretty fast for most purposes. But the numbers are pretty staggering in rural Wisconsin. According to your report, 25% of rural residents lack high-speed internet access, that being 25 megabits per second. But the saturation of those who have at least 10 megabits per second is much higher than that. 93% of rural Wisconsinites have 10 megabits per second internet. So what really, in practical terms, what is the difference between the two?
Well, let me go back a second first and just talk a little bit about really one of the challenges, especially in doing research on this, or for policymakers in terms of knowing really who has adequate speeds or not. The numbers that we're talking about, the 10 megabyte, the 25, are maximum advertised speeds. So if you have 25 megabyte service, that's the maximum that you're going to get on a very good day when nobody's on the internet. It might be 3 a.m. or something. During the day, during a work day, when there's a lot of people on, your speeds are generally going to be much lower than that. So to say, the FCC says, 10 megabyte, you can do a lot of what you need to do. The problem is if you have 10 megabyte service, you're probably at the time that you want to use it, your speeds are much, much lower than that. So this is one of the challenges in terms of knowing where the needs are we have to go by these advertised speeds rather than what people are really experiencing. So, you know, the FCC basically says, you know, that the 10 megabyte to 25, if you're in that range, if you're only using one device, one person in the household, you can do most anything that you need to do today, whether it's a Zoom meeting, you know, all of those kinds of things. If you've got two people on, there's a lot, you're going to have a lot less bandwidth, and you're going to have some challenges. If you have two parents working from home and you have a couple of kids on going to school, you're going to run into some problems probably. So again, that's where, you know, the FCC is talking about the 25 megabyte capability. And that's, again, more than likely, if you're going to be working from home, if your kids are going to be doing school from home, you're probably going to need even more than the 25.
And one thing that we learned in our household with a couple of people working from home and kids coming and going and that kind of thing, I live in an extended family kind of household where we have people with several of us trying to use Zoom during the day, maybe two people at a time. Somebody's in the other room trying to watch television. Every one of us has a cell phone that's hooked up to that Wi-Fi and a couple of tablets as well. So you have like eight devices all trying to suck their little piece of that connectivity away. And that makes a difference too.
It does. It does. And you know, we have the same problem. We were lucky enough that you know, my wife's company said, you know, if you don't have a certain level, we'll pay a little bit of your bill since we were working from home and whatever to get up to the speeds that we need to have to be able to conduct our business. So, you know, it helps, but again, we're at, you know, much higher speed now than the 25. And there are times where we still have some challenges in terms of connectivity.
We're talking today to Dale Knapp. He's the Director of Research and Analytics with the Wisconsin Counties Association. And we're talking about the report, Broadband in Rural Wisconsin, Identifying Gaps and Highlighting Successes. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like more information about our program, you can find it on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. Our conversation with Dale continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse Bureau. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Our guest is Dale Knapp. He's the Director of Research and Analytics for the Wisconsin Counties Association. We're talking about broadband internet access and how important it is to get those numbers higher in rural Wisconsin. We've been talking about the way different devices, having all these devices hooked up can just chip away at how much internet access we have. And Dale mentioned earlier also how that number that you're purchasing, that 25 megabits per second, 10 megabits per second, if that's what you have access to, is really the top of the line number, and how really many parts of the day you spend time getting internet access that's actually far below that. So let's talk about now about, you mentioned in the last segment, the different ways that you can connect internet to the house. So some people, depending on running that cable, but what other kinds of high-speed internet are available?
That's one of the things that I thought was really interesting that came out of this. When people think about broadband, they're thinking about, you know, the fiber optic cable or the TV cable that comes to their home. And for most people, that's what we're talking about. But there are some counties that have had success with some other technologies, and in particular, fixed wireless. So think about the cell towers that are out there. A fixed wireless connection are similar to that. They are towers that are placed throughout the county or whatever area that we're talking about, and the broadband access comes to you via radio waves, like essentially. And the surveys that have been done on this kind of access are kind of mixed. A lot of people say that there's not any challenges with that. Other people say that connectivity sometimes isn't as great as they think it should be. But generally, one of the things that we found is there are some counties that have used that much less expensive to install to get 25 megabyte access to their communities. For example, Kewaunee County is a good example. They have about 95% access at 25 megabyte. 80% of those people are getting it via fixed wireless. So it's a technology that is being used there and being used there very successfully. So when we're thinking about, I think this, when we're thinking about how do we get access to the rest of rural Wisconsin, there are options that aren't as costly of an investment to do that. And so I think we shouldn't just look at laying fiber optic, although that would be ideal. But because of the cost difference, I think that's another way that we can get 100% coverage, in some reasonable time here. And then there's another technology that's just coming out. People know Elon Musk from his Tesla cars and his space rockets. He has also gotten into the broadband business with essentially low orbit satellites. And so the idea is these are satellites that are orbiting the Earth at a much lower orbit than the satellites that you typically think of. And because of that, the thought is that they're going to be able to provide access, broadband access, anywhere in the world because with this. Now, there's still questions about speeds and about costs with this. But again, it's an emerging technology that has the potential to solve a lot of the rural challenges, especially when you get to the very remote areas of the state or of the country.
People hearing this might be concerned how their part of Wisconsin, their little corner of the world, fits into your report. Your report includes a county by county breakdown of exactly what percentage of people are covered by what kind of internet access. Are there areas of the state where you have, as a county's association, have particular concern or are specifically worried about?
Well, we're worried about all of our counties.
Of course.
So one of the things that we did is for this is instead of just, we looked at the percent that have access at 25 and at 10 to 25, et cetera, all these different levels. But then what we did is we said, okay, let's drill this down to sort of one number that we can sort of think about. And essentially we're looking at the percent that have access at 25, the percent that have access between 10 and 25 and at lower and lower speeds, to try to get a sense of really where the need is. And what you find is that Richland County, which is not far from you, really, in terms of the overall range of speeds, has the worst access. Some of the other counties that we're looking at would be Jackson County, Marinette, Douglas up north, and Forest County up north. So some of those counties, they might have a certain I think all of these counties have fewer than 50% access to 25, but in most of these they also have very few with even access to 10, and so that becomes a real challenge.
What about the bright spots on that same list? There are some counties that are doing it absolutely right, and what are those counties, and what are they doing that's successful?
Well, you know, one of the things when we say what are the counties doing, it's easy for a report like this to break it down by county, but it's not necessarily the counties are doing something. We are getting more involved in terms of getting people together and to try to figure this out. But the counties, in terms of actually implementing this, really don't have a lot to do with that. Counties. One of the things that you'll find is actually the counties that are doing the best are the rural counties that are nearer to urban counties. For example, Greene County, which borders Dane County, doing very well. Manitowoc, which is up by Sheboygan County, by Green Bay, doing similarly well. So they generally are the counties that abut more urban areas. Now, I will say one, when we talk about what are the counties doing, and again, it's more than just that. Forest County, one of the things that they've been doing is they have been getting between their economic development organization and the municipalities are getting together and trying to figure out how they can work together to try to get universal access up there. So that's really what it's going to take. It's going to take the towns, the municipalities to get together, and the counties can be involved in putting this together, but doing that and trying to figure out, okay, what's our plan? And I think that's going to be really important, because there's going to be federal money, state money available. And if you're a community that has a plan in place of how you're going to do this, I think you're ahead of the game in terms of getting some of that funding.
Speaking of that funding, we talk about these local areas, and as you mentioned, breaking it down by county is a convenient way to look at the numbers, but it doesn't necessarily speak to who's actually responsible for solutions or shortfalls. Funding for these kinds of things can come from local governments, more often comes from state and federal sources. What are the policy solutions that you as either a county association, or that you see as a researcher involved in putting a report like this together, what policy solutions are you looking for that could help increase internet access in rural Wisconsin?
What we have to do, and I think that the one good thing that kind of came out of this pandemic was really highlighting these gaps and pushing them to the front and center for state legislators and federal legislators that this is a problem that really needs to be fixed now. Should have been fixed 10 years ago, but it needs to be fixed now. So I think that's a positive. But I go back to what I said earlier. I think this, it has to be treated as really important infrastructure that we have to get in place. And so I think it has to be thought of in terms of this public-private partnership. One of the challenges we have clearly is that, again, this has all been done privately with some federal money, some state money, but it's the private industry that has been doing this. And they're, they don't want to give that up, and we don't really want them to, but it's going to take some public funding to get that infrastructure in there. And so that's where we have to focus on the federal government, the state government doing some of the funding. And I think that the private companies do some of the funding as well to make sure that it is profitable for them. But that's the focus. And the Governor Evers came out and said in his budget, he's putting in, I believe it's over $200 million into his budget for broadband which is you know the biggest number we've ever seen, which is a good start.
Who is it that's allowed to provide or to offer to sell internet access in Wisconsin? Everybody talks about, you know, or knows about like the phone company, as they used to be known, phone companies long time ago, the cable company and so on. Are like local electric cooperatives in rural areas allowed to offer that kind of service, or who's allowed to sell that?
To be honest, I'm not 100% sure anymore, because several years ago there were some restrictions put on municipal involvement in this, and I don't know. We were so focused on this, we didn't look into that, so I haven't really looked into it. But so I'm not totally sure. But you know, if you go to other states, municipalities in many cases are providing it or providing it in some areas. I don't believe we have that authority anymore. Municipalities do, or they can only do it if they jump through a bunch of hoops. But I'm not totally sure, you know, what the range of providers, you know, is in Wisconsin.
Dale Knapp of the Wisconsin Counties Association and Forward Analytics, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about rural broadband today, and if you'd like to hear part of this conversation again or check out a previous episode, you can stream them all on our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Speaking of how the economy is doing in the light of COVID-19, that is the topic of our conversation. We'll hear from the Federal Reserve and others coming up right after this. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. We're looking now at the economic impact of COVID-19 in western Wisconsin. Joining us is Ron Wertz of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. He spoke with our colleague, Dean Kallenbach.
So Ron Wertz, let's spend a little time with you. The Federal Reserve this month has been talking to people throughout the six-state Minneapolis district, which includes western Wisconsin, the northwestern third or so of Wisconsin. Those survey results are being tallied, and the first results are starting to show up to you, and you've got an opportunity to kind of share some of what you've seen. Full report coming out later. So from what you've seen so far, Ron Wertz, what are some of the highlights from the survey?
Well, there are an awful lot, and we are still digesting a lot of the results. Mm-hmm. Most of our results, just to give the listeners a little bit of idea about the survey, is we did this in mid-January. We got about 1,000 responses over that six-state region that you mentioned, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, mostly western Wisconsin, Minnesota, the Dakotas, and Montana. 1,000 responses, about 120 from Wisconsin. Most of them, we think, from western Wisconsin, because we get this survey out through partners like the Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce, the Seven Rivers Alliance in La Crosse, Grow North, which is an economic development in northern Wisconsin. So we think most of our responses in Wisconsin are from western Wisconsin. And what we generally heard, so kind of the headline portion of this, is we asked firms about how their fourth quarter was, the period from October, November, December, and we asked them to compare it to three different time periods, the same period last year. So, and not surprisingly, pandemic versus non-pandemic, we expected those results to be fairly poor, and they were. A lot of businesses compared to last year are seeing revenue declines compared to last year. Not a big surprise. We also asked them to compare it to the previous quarter, so the third quarter then compared to the fourth quarter. And there, I think I was maybe a little bit more surprised. Those results were also fairly poor. About half of the firms in our sample saw revenue decline, and only about 20% saw growth. So you are seeing some firms see some positive activity of late, but there's a larger share that are still having some struggles. Then we also asked them to tell us about their expectations for the first quarter compared to last year. And again, what we're seeing is that their expectations really are pretty close to the vest. Most, I think roughly about half, are expecting to see lower revenues in Q1 compared to last year. Hopefully the reality will be a little bit more positive, but that's what they're telling us right now.
This whole COVID thing has been something of a seesaw in multiple ways, but you know, when this started, we had huge unemployment in April after the stay-at-home orders, and then as those were removed and lifted, you know, less of that. But we never really saw the disease itself hit Western Wisconsin with any great force until the fall, and peaking in November when, you know, things were really, really tough. So it's not surprising to hear that, to me, that to hear that things may be down, may have been down a little bit in the fourth quarter of 2020.
Well, it I would agree, except, you know, for the I think there are lots of caveats to all of these results.
Sure.
I do think that that surge in November was problematic for a lot of businesses, because we have seen a fair a connection between infections and death rates and consumer activity. I guess what I would say is I was expecting maybe not quite the pullback that we saw, and we don't know exactly how connected these things are, but we definitely are seeing some effect. You're correct.
What sectors of the economy seem to be hardest hit?
This has been pretty consistent, you know, so those, you know, especially when consumers are reacting to virus trends, those businesses that see high levels of face-to-face contact, those that depend on crowds, those are the ones that have really been hurt the most. So accommodation, entertainment, you know, if you have a convention center or a music venue, any place where you're depending on crowds, you know, restaurants that, you know, can pack in 200-300 people, those are the firms that have really been consistently performing the worst or most negatively affected during the pandemic. And then on the opposite side, what we've seen in our survey work pretty consistently is that the financial sector has been reasonably not safe, because they've seen some negative impacts as well, but they've seen the least negative impacts to date. Manufacturing has also been performing better than the average also.
We're talking about the economy of Western Wisconsin and a snapshot that was recently taken by the Federal Reserve Bank District in Minneapolis. And Ron Wirtz from he's the regional outreach coordinator from the Federal Reserve in Minneapolis, is with us. With what you've seen lately and also what you've seen previously, any indicator that the federal stimulus efforts have had an influence on the businesses that responded to the survey?
As a matter of fact, we asked about that question, and not surprisingly, when the government gives out resources, that helps businesses that are struggling. So among the respondents that we had, roughly about 65% said the stimulus package, we didn't ask them what they received or anything like that, but in general, they believe that the federal stimulus has helped their business. About 30% said they didn't really see any effect, and then the remainder, 5% or so, said they saw some negative effect, and we don't know why exactly. So I don't think there's any question the federal stimulus helps businesses, because it is pushing more revenue to businesses, to consumers, to spend money. So we have, I think, definitely seen some positive impact from that.
And of course, as we talk to businesses, those businesses impact people. And I'm wondering if you had any indicators so far on how staffing levels at these businesses are holding up.
Yeah, well, as you would expect, if you're seeing negative revenue trends, that falls into everything else at a business. So we are seeing negative workforce trends as well. You know, we asked about both their compared to last year and then over the last 3 months, and both are a net negative response. So there are some that are growing. There are more that are contracting in terms of staffing sizes. It's a little bit more balanced. The good news is going forward in Q1, we're seeing a little positive shift. So more firms expect to grow their labor force in the first quarter than to reduce it. But we're coming off a period where we've seen a lot of job loss. So any growth is good. We're hoping that it can accelerate.
I'm seeing, it feels to me like, and maybe I'm noticing it because of what it seems like a contradiction, but it seems like there are a number of firms in a variety of sectors of the economy that are actually doing some pretty aggressive work for hiring. They're trying to get people on board. Did that show up at all in the survey or in the observations of the folks at the Fed?
Sure. You know, there's a lot of reasons why firms are hiring. In part, you know, we're hearing at least anecdotally that some firms are having to staff up because of quarantines. So when there's a quarantine, if someone is it does come down with the virus and they're at work, you might have 3, 4, 5 people that also have to leave work. So we are seeing some hiring just to be able to keep staffing levels up. And that, you know, and in order to keep, like, say, a manufacturing line operating, they might have to be doing more hiring. They're not expecting to, like, add net people, but there's a lot of reasons for why firms are having to hire right now. Some are also just experiencing growth right now. And some of them, you know, what the survey also told us is that even if you happen to be hiring, that doesn't mean you're necessarily finding workers, though.
Any impact on wages?
Yes. You know, for the most part, we are seeing net positive wage growth, which is good news. But what I would say is we are seeing more businesses have to cut wages. And that's a little unique. Wages tend to be pretty sticky on the downside, so they tend not to decrease very much. You tend to see job loss before there's, like, wholesale wage cuts. In this case, I think a lot of businesses leading into the pandemic really realized how hard it was to find labor. Mm-hmm. And so they've been a little bit more reluctant in some cases, anyways, to cut labor. And instead, they've decided to cut wages. And so we've seen 15, 16% of firms cut wages compared to pre-pandemic, but we are still seeing a net more businesses are increasing wages than decreasing them.
We've done a lot of stories and shows about the businesses where customer demand has slowed to almost nothing, entertainment, recreation, the arts. Any businesses that are reporting increased demand in our region that you noticed, or any types of businesses?
Anecdotally, you know, there are manufacturers that are doing quite well in certain consumer goods. Mm-hmm. So if you are a producer of, say, outdoor equipment, we're seeing those report really strong orders. And so there are pockets of where, you know, where consumer demand is really robust. Even if you were to look at certain sectors like in hospitality, which in general has done very poorly. If you go to some of the more lake, if you go to the lake areas in northern Wisconsin, in northern Minnesota, they reported very strong activity, at least through the third quarter when tourism was in, because outdoor activity, that's a safer environment. So it was actually an outlet where people weren't allowed to fly to vacations. So instead they were going to the lake area. And so there are a lot of pockets of both, you know, kind of deep hurt, as well as some growth. And that's what we're still kind of trying to better understand.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember early in the pandemic talking to some folks in tourism, and they were saying, you know, counties were saying, don't come up to your cabin, you know, don't do that. We don't want to spread the virus. And yet, obviously, some people did that, and apparently some businesses managed.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. There was actually some shifting on the messaging there. Very early in the pandemic, I do think that was a lot of the messaging from some of those northern counties where there's high amenities. And then I think as people kind of understood what the virus was, where risk was, I think they decided that it was an opportunity. So I think you did see more businesses opening up and more communities saying, yeah, this is a chance for us to maybe not take quite the economic hit we might otherwise.
Early on in the pandemic, we dealt with supply chain problems for paper products, for instance, and some grocery items. Are the businesses the Fed surveyed experiencing troubles getting the raw materials they need to bring goods to market?
It's probably one of the most consistent things we've heard from business in terms of difficulty in kind of a normal business operations. So not only in places like restaurants having to get supplies, we hear it very, very consistently from the construction sector. You know, construction projects are really input heavy. They come from lots of different places, come from manufacturing firms that have lots of people, and where there are quarantines, either, you know, in the plant or maybe with the distribution firm, there are just many, many ways for those supply chains to break. And we're hearing about that very consistently.
Ron Wertz from the Federal Reserve in Minneapolis is talking to us about some preliminary findings in their most recent survey that includes Northwestern Wisconsin, a pretty deep down dive into the economy and, of course, the effect of the pandemic on the economy. And before we go to break, what did the survey say about businesses' ability to stay solvent through the pandemic?
So we've been asking firms, you know, if under current conditions, if those persist, how long could you stay in business? And we kind of put a line in the sand at 3 months, not for any, you know, any academic research reasons, but we think there's not much visibility in this environment out beyond 3 months. So we kind of use that as a line in the sand to say where our business is. And the good news is that we have consistently seen that percentage that can't make it past 3 months decline. We seem to be stabilizing in that 12 to 14, 15% right now. So that's, you know, it's kind of good news in that things aren't quite as in emergency mode for many businesses, but 12 to 15% is still a really high number. So there are, you know, roughly 1 out of 8 businesses really don't know what happens, you know, 3 months out from now.
Ron Wertz is Regional Outreach Director for the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. He joined our colleague Dean Kallenbach on a recent episode of The West Side. That program airs weekly in the Eau Claire area. You can find it online at WPR.org. We'll have more of that conversation in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Back on Newsmakers, I'm Ezra Wall. We've been hearing from Ron Wertz of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis talking about the economic impacts of COVID-19. Our Eau Claire colleague, Dean Kallenbach, is the host of The West Side in that part of the state. He also spoke with Melissa Kono, the community development educator for UW-Madison Division of Extension in Trempealeau and Clark counties. She joins the conversation now.
After hearing all those survey responses, Melissa Kono, for the 6-state area served by the Federal Reserve in Minneapolis, how do those findings compare and contrast with what you're seeing on the ground in Trempealeau and Clark counties?
Well, I'll echo Ron's survey findings in that is what I am seeing locally, you know, especially with bars and restaurants. You know, I've been very concerned about those businesses from the start of the pandemic. I did watch them become very adaptable. You know, anytime we have a stressor, it does exacerbate things and kind of show the cracks that we have. But those bars and restaurants, you know, had to close down for a while. I saw some of them be very adaptable. They took that time to maybe do some deep cleaning or make some changes to their business. And then many restaurants and bars where I live adapted to a new way of doing business. So, you know, the restaurants had an increase with takeout orders or, you know, for the first time started doing things like takeout orders. I know that locally people, consumers really did want to support our local businesses. And so maybe people who had never ordered takeout before and are used to having lunch at a restaurant, you know, changed the way that they were doing things. I did talk to a bar owner who really, you know, she said what Ron found in his findings in that, you know, business has been really down since March. And you know, rarely is the bar open past 9:30 on a weeknight or midnight on a weekend, just because there are less people going out right now. And she said, you know, if she didn't already own the business, it would be really tough to make it. So it really speaks to how hard it might be for newer business owners in that industry. But, you know, too, we've seen other industries that have done quite well. Where I'm located in Trempealeau County, Ashley Furniture is a very large employer. And, you know, there has been an increase for home office furniture as people have telecommuted that have never telecommuted before. And also those stimulus payments that people receive. You know, some people have money to burn because they can't go and do other things like travel or, you know, go to concerts. And they're kind of stuck at home. So people were buying furniture with their stimulus payments. So, you know, it has been a shift in what people buy. But it really is looking at the haves and the have-nots. So for some people who maybe started telecommuting, their costs went down. I mean, less transportation costs from getting to and from work or meals out when they're at work, things like that. And kind of being stuck at home and stir crazy, looking for money to spend, and those stimulus payments helped with that too. But then there are the have-nots where it made some people who were maybe already vulnerable, these times made that harder for those people.
Ron Wertz, I'm wondering, broadband comes up, it seems, every week, no matter what topic we're talking about, and the ability to connect virtually, which has become so important. In your experience, or as you've observed things from your standpoint as the Federal Reserve's regional outreach manager, how important is strong broadband to the businesses and also the individuals who are working in those businesses here in Western Wisconsin?
I think it's terribly important. And I think the pandemic, if I wouldn't call it a silver lining, but I think the pandemic has really pushed forward the demand for broadband across the state, across the country. It really is the infrastructure for the 21st century and going, you know, over the next decade and decades, that not only for business, I think for, you know, life in general, I think we're seeing, especially in rural areas where we've had to go to virtual classrooms, we're seeing kids struggle having to literally, you know, sit outside of a school building because that's where the hotspot is in order to get educated. I think there are just so many issues related to broadband that I think it's really going to have to be one of those policy issues and one of those investment issues that we are going to have to pay attention to, and really quite quickly, because it really is the you know, the connector for so much of what the economy is, so much of what our lives are right now, and the pandemic has really emphasized that.
Melissa Kono, you know, you're in an area, especially in Trempealeau County, as I think about the geography of Trempealeau County, there are some challenges there with I'd assume with broadband, that sort of thing. And yet there are some pretty well-developed programs there as well. Talk about that and the impact that you're seeing in your role as the community development educator in Trempealeau and Clark counties.
Oh, yeah. Well, I agree with what Ron said. I mean, broadband is such a huge issue, and it's always been a rural issue. You know, it's tough to have really solid broadband in the rural areas. It's also an income issue, and that's not limited to a rural area either. But, you know, it's expensive to have that infrastructure, and it's expensive for people to afford. So what Ron says about, you know, kids being outside of the school, I see that too. I see outside of our public library, kids will be sitting on the front step because that's where they can access internet. And, you know, when you've added to that people who are now working from home that weren't planning to or hadn't been doing that before, and then also having children in virtual school, I mean, there is literally almost, there's so much bandwidth. And so sometimes, I mean, I have colleagues that can't meet at certain times of the day because their children are doing virtual school at that time, and there's not the service to support that. So if we're seeing that, you know, in maybe, you know, middle income households, imagine what it's like to try to access that service at lower income levels where it's either not there or people can't afford it. And, you know, having access to broadband is tied to other outcomes too. So, you know, so much of our health is tied to having access, you know, telemedicine, or even if you need to find out where to get a COVID test, you pretty much need to have internet to do that. And then, you know, our educational outcomes, being able to participate in virtual school, whether it's, you know, a full-time type of school, or, you know, as classes are quarantined and people have to jump onto a virtual learning for a while. And then obviously economic opportunities for people who, you know, maybe can't get a job working from home because they don't have access to broadband, whether they can't afford it or it's just not there.
That's the voice of Melissa Kono. She's associate professor and community development educator for Clark and Trempealeau counties with UW-Madison Extension. Also joining us today, Ron Wertz, regional outreach director with the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis.
And of course, they joined WPR's Dean Kallenbach on the west side in Eau Claire. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. Our program is produced by myself, Dawn Jewell, and John Davis. You can stream past episodes on demand on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. The show is available on many of your favorite podcasting platforms, too. Just search for Newsmakers. Thank you very much for tuning in this week. Please join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.